Hey! Hey. This is Phil. It's the host of PH5, the podcast that you are currently listening to. I'm saying, hey, how's it going? And, welcome back to the show. And I said, hey! Arthur Podcast. Arthur Podcast. What do you think that would be about? Homework! Or like, DW! I remember everyone loved Arthur. Like, I kind of feel like past the time that they should have loved it. Like, I remember being like, I don't know, 12, and some of my friends were still fucking with Arthur, and it's like, you guys gotta, like, move on. Like, watch some X-Men or some shit. Hi, so, yes, this episode is quite late. I'm aware of that. Sorry. I've been busy. I was out of town for the past week. Out of, like, this town. I wasn't really that far away. I was literally, like, half an hour down the road. But, you know, it was far enough. And I was away from my recording equipment. And I feel like the last episode, the sound quality was pretty bad. So I didn't want to, like do, like, a travel episode where the quality was even worse. I'm hoping this time around it's a bit better. I don't really know what happened or why. I did a little, like, test beforehand, and I think it sounds good, but, yeah, I listened to maybe 3 seconds of audio, assumed it was gonna be fine, and I'm just gonna go for it and record the entire thing. So if it sounds shitty again, I mean, that's just kind of too bad, to be honest, because it is what it is, and the record button is that red, and I do not intend for it to turn black again today. Until I finish recording, of course. Makes sense, right? So, we're talking about May. May, specifically, of the year 2024 today. Really busy month for me. My birthday was in May. So, if you haven't yet, please take this opportunity to send me a birthday message. Appreciate that. And yeah, there was just a lot of stuff going on. I mean, I think about May, it was jam-packed of music releases. It was one of those five Friday months. So, I mean, lots of stuff to kind of wade through. A lot of, like, events happened. Fucking Steve Albini died. Crazy to think that only happened, like, in May, like, last month. Like, it feels like forever ago. But more on that later. Toronto's first ever edition of Prepare the Ground happened, which is, like, a festival for kind of, like a very specific type of weirdo that I fortunately fall into the category of. Just kind of, like, weird, heavy music. That was great, although I only really got to go to one day of the three. And yeah, I saw a bunch of concerts. I think I went to, not even including Prepare the Ground, I think I went to 4 different shows in May. So, yeah. My ears are just a buzz, you know? Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm very diligent about my earplugs. I'm really about that shit. As anyone who attends shows can attest to. But, I feel like it gets to a point where it just doesn't matter. Because my tinnitus is going crazy these days. On which note, I heard recently that this one kind of experimental artist somehow managed to record her tinnitus. Which is strange, because, like, the whole prevailing theory of it, medically, is that it's not an actual sound. It's, your brain making up for the lack of sound that's coming in from your, dead cilia in your ears. But she managed to record it. apparently. I haven't heard it yet. Which kind of throws the whole thing into question of, what even really is this? What do we know about this really horrible phenomenon? Not much, which is depressing, for sure. Because, I mean, I don't like it. I would like it to go away. I would like it to be cured, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. That's okay. You get used to it. We got some records to talk about. So I could sit here and just kind of stream of consciousness talk for an hour. And realistically, that's what I'm going to do. But, you know, focused around music, as is the theme of the show. I also noticed listening back to last episode, I rarely listen to my episodes because I think I have a very strange voice that is quite disquieting to hear personally. But I notice that I say, you know, like I do the you know a lot, so I'm going to try to be really mindful of that. This episode and cut back on that because one, it's annoying, I'm sure, and two, like, I don't know if you know, so it's just a strange thing to think. I can't assume anyone knows anything at all. I can assume that they know how to find and download and play podcasts. Because if you're listening to it, then you've managed to do that. But other than that, I mean, I don't know who you are. I don't know who's listening to this. I look at the stats of this, and like I get plays in the strangest places globally. And I'm really curious, like, who are you people, and how did you find this, and why are you listening to it? I don't quite understand. So if any of you random people who, I don't know, listen to this, and I don't really know who you are, I would love to know about you and how you found this and why you're listening, because it seems quite, you know, esoteric, really, like just some random, you know, guy in Toronto talking about albums that he liked. Like, why are you listening? Why do you care? So please, reach out. My email is pjamesmaye@gmail.com. Like, literally email me and just, like, tell me why you're listening to my show. If you want, or don't, because, like, that seems like a waste of your time. But if you have 30 seconds and you're a quick typer, please, I just wanted, like, what? But hey, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for it. Seriously, I don't want to sound like it's not like I don't want you to listen to it. You know, like, it's cool that you are. I just don't really know why you are, and I would love to understand why. But that's what life's about, isn't it? Trying to just understand why. Or, I mean, maybe it's not about that. Could be about something else. Okay, so let's get started on the albums. And, yeah. Okay, yeah, let's go. Anyway, I'm gonna have a sip of coffee, and then we'll talk about music. How does that sound? You don't have a choice. Well, you do have a choice. You could turn it off if you wanted to. So you do have a choice, but so do I, and I am choosing to continue with the episode. Here we go, PH5, May 2024. Thanks for listening, whoever the fuck you are. Okay, so number 5 for May 2024, we have Mock Hummy with hashtag Rich Axe Haitian. I think the title, if you want to like say it out loud, is probably like Rich Ass Haitian. But I want to make sure you know exactly what to Google if you do so, choose to do so, for this record. And it would be hashtag Rich Axe, two X's, Haitian. Throw in another X in there and you've got an entirely different form of media that I will be checking out as soon as I finish recording this episode. Kidding. So this is fun because we're going to actually be talking about quite a bit of hip-hop on this episode, which is a different kind of change of pace here, but that's just kind of how the month went. And each album I'm going to talk about is kind of touches on a different kind of zone within the genre, you know? So the genre zone that Mock Homie kind of dwells in is this kind of New York Griselda adjacent style of, I want to say, fairly experimental hip hop. It's kind of like a deconstruction of boom bap, where the music is very kind of freewheeling and stream of conscious, and you don't typically get a lot of choruses or anything like that, although you do get a few on this album, but it's more about just this kind of disjointed, kind of almost like dream logic flow through the record. And the way that Mack Homie typically raps, he often switches from English to French to you know, a very Haitian form of dialect and back, in a way that it's kind of confounding and deliberately obfuscating. It's meant to kind of keep you on your toes, and you can't really just listen to this in the background if you want to truly understand what he's doing in the music. It demands your attention, really. And that can be challenging sometimes. And something to note about Mock Homie, this is his first kind of real quote-unquote official full-length since Pray for Haiti, which came out in, when was that, 2022, I think, maybe 2021. Which was an amazing record, one of my favorites of the year, and he's been very busy since with various EPs and kind of mixtapes, and that's when he chooses to kind of go a little bit deeper into his kind of weirdo side, with, you know, very structureless songs and just bars on bars on bars with no real, you know, form or reasoning to the actual songs themselves. As this is kind of a more official release, you see him kind of sticking to a little bit more structure here than normal, but it's still very freewheeling and is very apt to kind of drift off into one direction before all of a sudden coming back to something else. It's not quite to the level of abstraction as something like Armand Hammer, which is almost a completely new, different genre of music in and of itself because of how fucking weird and out there it is. But it's still pretty out there, for sure. As you can gather from the title, Mock Homie is Haitian. Well, at least has a Haitian background. Who he is kind of a mystery. No one's really quite sure who he is, but a lot of the subject matter on previous records have been about his Haitian background and life in Haiti. But this one touches on it significantly more, which makes a lot of sense given the kind of absolute chaotic political situation in Haiti right now. For those of you who aren't aware, Haiti is currently has basically completely fallen into anarchy with gangs more or less usurping the government and political powers of the nation, and it's just complete chaos over there right now. Haiti's always kind of been in a rough spot, but you know, arguably things are worse now than they ever have been. And Macomi takes a lot of time to address this and talk about his people and talk about, you know, the struggles of an everyday person whose, you know, life from morning to night is struggle and just chaos and just trying to get by in a world that doesn't really care about you. It's a familiar kind of situation. I mean, I feel like as people, we only really have capacity to empathize with one thing at a time, you know? Like, I'm, you know, very, very, very adamantly for the Palestinian movement, you know? Free Palestine, obviously, that's been the motto for decades now. And it is, you know, a quite concerning situation, but it is interesting how there are similar, if not worse, things happening across the globe. Like when you look at things going on in Sudan and Congo, and we're talking about millions of people dying at the hands of kind of violent arbitrators. And then you look at, you know, what's going on in Haiti and how the government has literally been overthrown by these gang lords. So, you know, but you don't really hear about any of that. I mean, you barely even really hear about what's going on in Palestine. I mean, that has significantly increased over the past few months for sure, with Israel's efforts, we'll call them. But all these other things are happening, and no one talks about it. No, like, I wouldn't say that it's not that no one cares. It's just that we don't have the ability to spread out our empathy and our attention to more than kind of one thing at a time. And I mean, it's understandable in a way, like, it's hard, you know? It takes a toll on you to constantly be kind of faced with all these atrocities and learn more and more about the injustices that are happening to people. And that's just in one place. Then you kind of compound it by adding on all of these other things that are happening around the world. Things that are even maybe worse than what you're already aware of. And it's difficult, you know? You get kind of like a international empathy burnout situation. It's hard. But that being said, you need people like Macomi who are going to still talk about it and try to bring attention to it, because clearly no one else is going to. Like, I mean, I hear every now and then on the news about an update about what's happening in Haiti, but it's really nothing compared to, you know, hearing almost every single day about what's happening in Gaza. Again, I want to be perfectly clear that I am not trying to detract from the situation in Gaza and what Israel is doing. I'm just commenting that it's, you know, interesting and very sad that we can't kind of, you know, spread our attention and our focus to all of the very, very shitty things happening around the world, and we kind of feel the need to zone in on one that for whatever reason is closest to us and is something that we connect to the most. So, anyway, great record. Bit of a tangent there. The record, I don't think, is quite as good as Pray for Haiti. I feel like that is just a really focused, really fully realized record. This one kind of tends to meander at times and just doesn't quite hit as hard or the same way, but it's still a fantastic record from one of the greatest rappers in the game right now. Most interesting for sure, Mac Hommy. And again, without him, I don't want to say we wouldn't be, you know, having these artists shining light on the situation in Haiti, because I'm sure there are tons of artists out there doing it. But in the hip-hop world, he's certainly the guiding force of that awareness. So, shout out to him. This is important, and we need to start paying attention to more than just one thing. Anyway, coming in at number 5, we have Mac Hommy with #RichAxeHaitian. So, number 4 for May 2024, we have Chief Keef, Almighty So 2. So, this is kind of what I was talking about with the different zones of hip-hop, because we're going to just swing wildly in the complete opposite direction with this one, where Rich Ass Haitian, you know, spends a lot of time, you know, being eloquent and talking about the complex situations happening not only in Haiti, but, you know, here in North America, socially. This record is just basically pure ignorance, but in a good way and in a very, very fun way. So, Chief Keef, it's really astounding what this man has accomplished in his life in terms of basically changing hip-hop and staying relevant, despite the fact that, you know, he first burst onto the scene, you know, almost 15 years ago as a 15-year-old. And, I mean, you look at a lot of young artists who come on to whatever scenes at a very young age. They either tend to, you know, burn out pretty quickly and disappear, or, you know, they kind of get weird. I don't know who else to say it. I'm just thinking of, like think of where Justin Bieber's at today. Like, what's up with that guy? Like, is he really okay? I know that, you know, I know he's kind of been through a lot in his life, but I mean, I've seen pictures of this dude lately, and he looks like shit, you know, straight up. I mean, he's really rich, so I feel a little less bad about just outwardly saying that. But this is kind of a recurring situation, recurring theme. You know, you hit fame very young and early, and, you know, the pratfalls of fame hit you young and early as well, and by the time you kind of reach adulthood, you're a bit of a mess, you know? And there I go with the, you know. I can't stop it. All I can do is try to slow it down. Chief Keef is an interesting case because not only has he remained relevant in his own unique way, he's also just kind of seems to be better now than he ever has in his entire life. So, after breaking out onto the scene with, you know, I Don't Like, and Love Sosa, and finally Rich, his big major label debut, which again was a massive hit, with remixes by Kanye West and features by 50 Cent, and basically putting the Chicago drill scene on the map and changing the way that hip-hop artists approach their music and their music videos, he kind of has turned away from that level of mainstream fame that he had and has instead become one of the biggest cult underground figures in hip-hop. And he's had a lot of kind of cult famous mixtapes, whether it be Back from the Dead or kind of the initial first Almighty So. People have been waiting on the follow-up to Almighty So for years now. He's teased it and he's teased it. And the problem with teasing something and kind of building something up for the hype for that long is there's usually no way it can actually live up to the hype. But on this record, he's managed to do it. He's managed to kind of take his DIY maximalist sound and hone it and refine it. And this sounds like the record of someone who has cleaned up but still has that same energy and that still intensity, but with a little bit more focus and a little bit more I guess like peace of mind to be able to actually deliver what it is, this vision that they've had in their head for so long. Keith has been like struggling with various drug addictions throughout his entire life, and the way that he approaches his music, taking everything into his own hands, his production, you know, the music videos, the lyrics, everything like that, it's always been exciting and intriguing, but it's been sloppy and messy, with really chaotic mixing and just generally strange decisions, which you can kind of, you know, chalk up to the fact that this guy has been just completely fucked out of his mind on drugs for, you know, a decade and a half now. Anyway, he's cleaned up. He's been off lean for a while now. And this record maintains a lot of that same chaos and a lot of the same kind of endearing DIY qualities as a lot of his older records. But A, you can really make out what he's saying now. You know, his words are a lot less slurred. There's a lot of great enunciation in the way that his lyrics are kind of portrayed. And the lyrics themselves, like, he's finally kind of got a clear mind, and man, this guy is fucking funny as hell. I gotta say, like, I love listening to this record, not only because of the music. The music's great. He's a pretty good songwriter. Like, he knows how to write a chorus. He knows how to write catchy songs. But this guy's lyrics are just out of this world hilarious. And I just find myself laughing multiple times as I listen to this record. I'm not going to pinpoint any lyrics specifically because generally not a good look for a mid-30s white guy to be reciting, you know, a young mid-20 Chicago black rapper's lyrics on his podcast. I'll let you go in and listen for yourself, but there's weird kind of quirks to his writing that are just so funny and strange and entertaining. Like, there's multiple bits about how he, like, really doesn't want to get married, which is, like, such a funny thing for him to be fixated on. He's, like, oddly sentimental, but it always happens when he's, like, yelling and just the kind of weird friction between him sounding gruff but saying a line like, oh, like, you'll miss me, or I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's really, really interesting. It's a lot of fun. The features that he bring in all kill it. Like, for instance, the Tierra Whack feature, like, she kind of goes off harder on this song than she does on her entire record. The Sexy Red feature is an absolute blast. The chemistry that those two have is amazing. But really, this is Keith's show, and you just gotta sit back and join him for the ride, and I promise you're gonna have a great time. This guy knows how to put on a party. He knows how to keep the people entertained, and that's exactly what you get with this record. You know, he's been around for this long, and he's still so young. We have decades more of Chief Keef to look forward to if he so desires to continue recording. And if you ask me, that's a blessing, because this is a sign that, if anything, he's just getting better. So, coming in at number 4, we have Almighty So 2 by Chief Keef. Number 3, we have Knocked Loose with You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To. And in a way that probably actually doesn't make any sense at all, Knocked Loose weirdly kind of reminds me of Chief Keef in a way, in that they're just so unapologetically themselves, and the more they lean into kind of being unique and being themselves, the better their music is, and kind of the more popular it gets them. So this is, I believe, their 3rd full length. They've had a few EPs that have dropped for a while, but it's actually quite astounding to think that this is only their 3rd record, and yet you could easily make a case that maybe other than Turnstile, who hardly even apply to the label anymore, this is the most popular band in hardcore. They kind of refer to themselves as, like, weird music for normal people, which, I mean, makes sense, because they have a crazy level of popularity. And it's not because they've toned their sound down or watered it down or you know, sold out or anything like that. You could argue that this latest record is maybe some of their heaviest. It's definitely their most kind of abrasive and chaotic that they've made. And yet they just continue to grow and grow in popularity. They're on a headlining tour right now with Loathe and Show Me the Body as openers. And those are two bands that can and have headlined their own tours no problem. They were opening acts for Motionless and White, who are basically like one of the biggest teen metal bands out there. Like, teen metal. Do you know that? Like, do you get what I mean when I say that? I mean just like completely poppy, terrible, bullshit, pretending to be slightly heavy music. They're about to go on tour with Slipknot as the kind of main opening act for Slipknot, one of the top 5 most popular metal bands in the world right now. Like, these guys have a draw of their own. And might I add, for that Slipknot show, you could bet that probably about half the people at all these shows are going to be there for Knocked Loose. And Slipknot is just kind of like a cherry on top. It's really bizarre how popular they've gotten, because again, they've never really kind of sold out. They've never made any kind of stab at mainstream success. When they do bring in features, for example, on this record, you have Poppy, and you have the main guy from Motionless and White. But rather than using these features as an excuse to, you know, bring in some melody or bring in something remotely resembling, you know, a pop chorus or something like that, instead they bend their features to their will. And you have Poppy on here screaming her fucking lungs out in a way that I've never heard her do on record. You have the Motionless and White guy sounding like, you know, another vocalist in Knocked Loose, which, again, I'd never listened to their music before, but out of curiosity, I gave a few tracks a listen, and it does not sound like this band, okay? So, their lack of compromise versus their level of success is just astounding, and it's not really anything that you see these days. And because of that, you can, it's easy to kind of find things to pick at or find reasons not to like them, because, you know, it's easy to hate success. Does that sound brutally kind of, you know, pessimistic or cynical? Yeah, it does, but, you know, that's me for you, I guess. But this is a band that you can't really hate their success, because they haven't done anything wrong. They haven't changed who they are. They've just become kind of more of what they are, and it's just paid off for them. They just so happen to be really good at what they do. I was talking to Bob about this record, and he made a great comparison. He compared it to the latest Vane record. I forget what it's called. It's actually kind of a similar run-on sentence, like the album, like this album's title. But that Vane record, whereas their first record, Error Zone, was really memorable, with tons of parts that kind of stood out, whether it be riffs or, you know, cool, you know, breakbeat breakdowns and stuff like that. That record really focused on using production and kind of muddying up their sound to create this unique experience that didn't always work. It left a lot of the record feeling, unfortunately, a little bit unmemorable, just because it just, the way that they had purposely mixed it just didn't really work, and wasn't really that interesting. A lot of this record uses the same approach of using kind of chaotic production techniques to stitch the record together. In a lot of the ways, this record does feel almost like a Frankenstein. Less so made of individual songs than parts that have been kind of freakishly put together to create this really unnerving, disjointed experience. But for the most part, it actually works for them, and it does create this really nightmarish, hellish cacophony of noise that is really intriguing, and again, it just kind of works for them, and it keeps you coming back to the record, because it's really fun to listen to. It is, again, nightmarish and kind of like scary in ways. I don't really know how else to put it. But you keep going back because it's intriguing, and you want to be able to remember a part, and you want to feel like you're in on whatever it is that they're trying to do. Quick aside, I've read somewhere that someone told me that the lead vocalist, there's actually three vocalists in this band. If you listen carefully, you can kind of pick them out. But the lead guy kind of sounds like if Elmo fronted a hardcore band. Elmo screams. And now I can't unhear that. It's cool, though, because, like, I think Elmo fronting a hardcore band would be pretty sick. So, I mean, I'm all for that. But give it a listen, and let me know if you also think that Knocked Loose kind of sounds like if Elmo fronted a hardcore band. Anyway, really cool record from a band that whose star just kind of seems to continue to rise and rise without any stop in sight, despite them just kind of getting weirder and darker with each new release. And I respect the hell out of that, because, you know, it's usually the exact opposite that happens. So it's just refreshing to see a band that gets more and more strange and people just eat it up. So, number three, we have You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To by Knocked Loose. Okay, I guess we should do some mentions.
These are the mentions.
The mentions.
Okay, woo. This is a long one. We already have 40 minutes. Okay, well, you know what? I've been pretty good at keeping it around the hour mark for a while, so I'm allowed to indulge a little bit for this time. Plus, you know, May was my birthday, so for my birthday, I am treating myself to an extra long episode of PH5. You're welcome. So, honorable mention for May 2024, we have Gate Creeper with Dark Superstition. Hold on, let me just triple check that that is actually the name of the album. Yes, it is. Great. Nailed it. So Gate Creeper are this, they're a death metal band, if you could have guessed from the name. From, I don't know, somewhere in the States, I think somewhere down south. And they've released a few records of, you know, pretty straightforward, pretty decent death metal. I've liked them. Have never loved them, but I've always kind of checked for their music whenever it's come out. But this record has kind of really appealed to me and stood out more than their other ones because they decided to go in this really interesting, really kind of melodic route, really heavily influenced by Swedish death metal. And it's really working for them, and it's a lot of fun. I don't want to say like the opposite of a band like Knocked Loose, but the thing with Knocked Loose and a lot of modern hardcore and even death metal bands at times is, you know, I don't want to say forgotten about the riff, but the riff isn't as important. You know, modern heavy music these days in a lot of ways, like the breakdown has become the new riff, you know, like, the songs are structured around breakdowns and different kind of approaches to breakdowns. And you get a lot of kind of monotonous chugging and, you know, kind of one-note breakdowns. And a lot of bands do it really well. Like, Knocked Loose is a great example of that. I couldn't pick out one riff from the entire Knocked Loose record, but I could pick out a bunch of really, really fucking sick breakdowns that go really hard. That's just the direction that, you know, the genre is going in. There's nothing wrong with it per se. But I like riffs. I'm like a riff guy, you know? I love breakdowns, but I also love me some riffage. And this record is just a nice, big, fat gumbo soup of riffs. This almost classifies as, you know, you're almost bordering on death and roll, which is like a, you know, kind of really heavy version of rock and roll, or, you know, death metal that brings in a lot of, you know, just straight up classic rock influences. What with just the crazy amount of really catchy, memorable riffs on this record. Like, if you were to replace the vocalist with someone maybe doing some clean singing here, you've basically got more or less a classically straight-up heavy metal record. And a lot of people might be turned away from that. They might not be a fan of this new, more melodic approach to the sound. But, you know, as someone who does listen to a lot of, you know, abrasive, chaotic, you know, non-melodious music, it's nice to hear some riffs every now and then. And these guys bring them. That's what it's all about. You know, this is why I'm listening to this record, because I want to hear some great riffs, and they've brought them. Great songs, great riffs. Is it an exceptional record? I wouldn't go that far, but if you are interested in riffs, I don't know if I've mentioned this yet, but there are a lot of great riffs on this record. So if you like riffs and you want to hear some good riffs, the riffs on this guitar are really good. So on this guitar, on this album, but played on the guitar. So check out Gate Creeper's Dark Superstition if you like riffs. The mention is going to be to all trains by shellac, fronted by the now extinct Steve Albini. So his death was kind of a hard one, for sure. Not just for me, but for, you know, thousands and thousands of weirdos across the globe. It's really impossible to, you know, exaggerate how important Steve Albini is to alternative music, to punk music, to the DIY ethos in, you know, the underground scene. Like, he really is kind of the godfather of all that, because of his early bands, because of his production style, and because of his approach to the business itself. So it was weird when he died, because they had only announced this record, I think, a week or so beforehand, and then he died, and then a week later the record came out. It was just this kind of strange, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, oh, Steve Albini's back with a new shellac album. Oh shit, he's dead. Oh shit, the record's out now. Like, it was a lot that happened in a kind of short period of time, and a lot to process quickly, really. Steve Albini's a complicated guy, because he used to be just a really huge piece of shit. Someone who may have not necessarily, like, done anything that bad, like, in terms of actual physical actions, but he was a, you know, preeminent edgelord back in the day, with some really, really awful song titles and subject matter and even band names, and just really, really bad jokes about some really disgusting topics that I'm not really interested in talking about here. Just kind of a brutal person who, coming from a place of privilege, knew that he could get away with being really shitty and really leaning into that as a part of his persona. But what's interesting about Steve is that he acknowledged this later in his life and kind of came to terms with it, and has been very explicit about apologizing for his behaviors in the past and saying, you know, what I was doing was wrong. He recognized his privilege. He recognizes that he was just saying things to kind of get a stir out of people, and doing that it's not cool. It's not good. You're not helping the world by, you know, trying to push the limits of what you think is funny and what isn't. So his acknowledgement of that and his regrets for the kind of person he was is refreshing, because most people just kind of tend to double down on their bullshit. I don't know if you've found that in your personal life, in, you know, life in general. That's just kind of the way that things go most of the time. But Steve didn't do that. In fact, later in his life, he became a very, very vocal supporter of trans people and, you know, marginalized communities, and would do everything he can to defend them and, you know, speak out against people who would look to talk down on them or harm them. So, I don't know. It's how you view Steve Albini is kind of up to you. Do you believe in forgiveness? Do you believe that people can change? Do you believe that it's okay to have been wrong if you acknowledge it? Because certainly he was wrong, and a lot of the, again, things he said, the songs he made, the bands he made, were really awful. Again, I'm not going to go into it. You can look it up if you don't already know the kind of shit that he used to get up to. But is it okay that he did all that if later in life he acknowledged it and apologizes for it and, you know, strive to be better? I think that's really a matter of opinion. I think so, personally. I mean, I know that when I was young, you know, a very late teenager, early 20s, I said and did a lot of really heinous shit that I certainly am not proud of, that I took the time to learn about and do what I could to just become a better person, more conscious of the world and you know, the people in it. So it seems unfair to be hard on someone for that when I myself had a lot of the same problems. I don't know, you know, like, if you take the time and effort to grow and learn and become a better person, if you ask me, I think we need to find it in our hearts to accept and forgive. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you disagree. It's hard to say. It's really a matter of opinion. The record itself is pretty good. Not one of his best, but it's kind of hard to just talk about the record, you know? Like, Albini's death coinciding with the record release was tricky because you can't listen to the record without the context of his passing and his legacy kind of hanging over it, you know? I would be really interested to see what people thought of the record if he hadn't died. If this had just been, like, the next Shellac album, what would the general consensus have been without the context of him passing over it? That's a whole other discussion. You know, it reminds me a lot of Black Star by David Bowie, which came out, and then, what was it, two or three days later, he died. And then all of a sudden, all the discourse around the record became about Bowie's death and Bowie's legacy and what this record kind of meant in context of everything. But where Black Star directly addressed the end of his life and all of that, this really does kind of sound like just another record. Like, I don't think Albini knew he was about to die. But how do you listen to this record objectively? How do you sit there and just treat it as a piece of music devoid of any of that context? You know, nothing exists within a vacuum. So, I don't know. It's hard. But anyway, that is going to conclude my spiel Albini. I was trying to do like Steve Albini, but like a spiel of Albini, like spielbini. That's the mention for the month. Shellac to all trains. And lastly, we have the dishonorable mention. This one is going to go to Pallbearer with Mind Burns Alive. And I'm thinking back now. One second, I'm just gotta take my shirt off. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but it was really about a decade ago or so that Pallbearer released Foundations of Burden, which ended up being my favorite record of 2014 and truly one of my all-time favorite records. I talked about, you know, the importance of the riff with the Gatecreeper record, and that Pallbearer record is literally, like, it's the best riff you've ever heard, followed by the best riff you've ever heard, followed by somehow an even better riff for an entire album. Like, I think pound for pound, or note for note, I guess, however you want to use the expression here, that record has the best riffs ever. And because of that, some of the best Doom or Doom adjacent songs that I've ever heard in my life, and it is so good. And every time I go back to that record, I'm still just blown away by how fucking sick it is. A lot of times I think about, okay, you know, I claimed at this time that Such and Such record was my favorite that year. How did that take age? Because, you know, when you're kind of a loser like I am, you actually spend time thinking about these things. But that I stand by 100%. That is just really a phenomenal record from start to finish, and one of the best in the genre, I would say. Paul Bearer has not quite lived up to Foundations of Burden. Their follow-up, Heartless, was kind of a thornier version of it. And then they had another follow-up, and then I think maybe one more. And the diminishing returns just became kind of more and more apparent. I liked Heartless, didn't really care so much about the one after that. I'm not even really sure if there was another record after that one, in which leads us to today, with this new record, Mind Burns Alive, which I really hate to say it, might be one of the most boring records that I've heard this year, in any genre. And if I didn't care so much about this band, if they hadn't had such an impact on me however many years ago, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. But to kind of see a band go from these absolute songwriting powerhouses to this kind of slog of a record is just very sad. It hurts. It hurts me. I'm an emotional person, and it hurts me. You know, I know that they're capable of doing better than this, and, you know, I follow them on social media. They built up a lot of hype around this record. I thought it was going to be, you know, a return to form, but it's a return to bore. How was that one? That was pretty good, right? It kind of eschewed almost all of their doom and really leaned into their progginess, which is not the issue here. Like, there's that band Elder, who, you know, kind of played in that doom metal area when they first started their career before turning into the basically straight up prog band that they are today. But that's okay, because their latest record is so good, and you can be a prog band and still kick a ton of ass and have a lot of fun and be exciting and rewarding to listen to. But this record is just not, it's none of that. I can tell that a lot of emotion went into it, but it's just not hitting, you know? I want to like it, but they're not really giving me much help here, you know? It's a shame. I get it. Bands grow. People change. Life goes on. But I miss the old Paul Bearer. I hate to say it. A decade ago, I was just absolutely in love with this band. I couldn't get enough of that record. Listened to it over and over and over again. And these days, I can't even get through their new one. That's just life, though, isn't it? So, the dishonorable mention for the month is going to Mind Burns Alive by Paul Bearer.
These are the mentions.
Okay. We're almost there, alright? Hang on. Bear with me. Okay, we got two records to go, and then you can go home, okay? Or go nowhere, or do whatever that isn't this. So, number two, we have Dark Times by Vince Staples. This is the final hip-hop record of the month that I'll be talking about, and it, again, kind of fits into a completely different zone from the first two that I've mentioned, where Matt Commie kind of lives in abstraction and, you know, experimental structures, and kind of more internationally minded subject matter, and Chief Keef lives on, you know, kind of youthful exuberance and maximalism and hilarity and just, you know, having a good time and bangers. Vince has become this artist that lives in this weirdly introspective lane. It's not exactly where you would have expected Vince Staples to end up as a rapper when he first came onto the scene about a decade ago. So Vince was kind of an Odd Future affiliated person, not really a part of the crew, but definitely friends with them back in California, back when they were still a thing, really. He started out as kind of a, you know, hard-hitting gangster rap foil to their kind of weirdo horrorcore style, and his first few records really played into that. But by the time Summertime 06 rolled around, you could tell that there was a bit more of an artistic side to Vince that he was initially showing. That he wasn't all just, you know, talking about the gangster lifestyle. Well, and he still did a lot, but instead of kind of glorifying it, he was spending a lot more time kind of talking about the negative sides of it, and using really interesting production to do so. And that was kind of his breakout record, and he followed up with Big Fish, which he worked on with a lot of really kind of avant-garde, almost dance producers on, creating this record that, while still definitely a rap record, was almost electronic in its approach to the production. And I believe this record even has a song produced by Sophie, of all people. Just to show you that this guy was really willing to work with people outside of the typical hip-hop wheelhouse. And ever since Big Fish, he's kind of gone on this trajectory of getting weirdly more and more almost low-key and becoming more insular in his music. His last two records, self-titled Vince Staples and Ramona Park Broke My Heart, are records that kind of rely on reflection and, you know, how hard it is to grow up in the hood and, you know, living that kind of lifestyle. And Vince talking about a lot of his gratitude for being able to make it out of it. I haven't been the biggest fan of this new direction of his, to be honest with you. I don't know. Something about it just hasn't quite landed for me. This kind of lower key style. He's kind of more muted. Rapping. I don't know. It's something that I respected more than I actually felt a desire to listen to. But with this new record, it sees him really perfecting this and doing so over really, really interesting production styles that, again, show that he does have one of the more interesting ear for beats in rap right now, and is one of the more talented kind of storytellers in the game at the same time. A lot of this record reminds me almost of Damn by Kendrick Lamar. Obviously not quite at the same level of artistry and, you know, technical skills. You know, even as a guy that isn't as big on Kendrick as everyone else is, I still understand what an absolute, you know... He's put out, like, 4 masterpieces now. Like, you can't deny that. He's just that good. Again, he's not quite on that level, but he's... Vince is adventurous. He's not afraid to try something new. So my kind of joke... So here's my joke if you want to hear it. He should call this record Dang. Because it's like a... Not like, you know, not quite damn level. But it's like dang, you know? Should have called it Dang. Anyway, I thought it was an okay joke. But now that I've actually gone and said it on the podcast, it maybe isn't quite as good of a joke as I thought it was. But anyway, so this is the first Vince record that has really worked for me in quite some time. Because it actually sounds like he's opened up to having a little bit more fun again. You know, despite the title Dark Times, you know, there's a little bit more of an upbeat vibe happening in a few of these songs here. There's the song Etouffée or something, I don't know, it's a French word, which is a direct homage to New Orleans Bounce, with even a complete beat switch near the end of the song going into a bounce beat. He's having fun. There's a song on here that kind of dictates a story about him, you know, meeting some girl, and then, you know, they're back at her apartment, and I guess her man comes home, and she calls him her little cousin. Like, it's funny. It's a kind of nice departure from this almost too serious tone that Vince has adopted over the past few records, which I guess kind of coincides with his Netflix show, which I haven't watched, but from my understanding is pretty funny. And this is the thing with Vince, is he's a funny guy. Like, I've been following him on Twitter for like a decade now, and he's a must follow because he's just so funny. He's extremely, the way that he approaches humor in his very deadpan kind of cynical way is hilarious. He's that kind of guy, but his music has always lacked that level of humor or that level of personality that him as a person actually has. Whereas this record, you feel that personality. You get the sense that he's allowing himself to just be himself on this record, on top of some really, really fantastic and interesting production. So, is this a great record? Maybe not quite, but I'd say it's pretty damn good. Pretty dang good. And if for anyone who has maybe fallen off the Vince Staples thing, kind of lost interest in him, give this record a shot. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by just how generally enjoyable it is. I mean, despite the almost pure darkness of the album cover and the, you know, pessimism of the title, he's bringing in a little bit more light here. And it's refreshing and definitely very rewarding. So, number 2 for May 2024, we have Dark Times by Vince Staples. Okay, number 1, let's go. So, number 1 for the month of May 2024, we have Umbilical by Thou. Yeah, okay. If you don't know this about me, Thou is one of my favorite bands. Their last full-length record, not a collaboration, just them, was 2018's Magus, which was easily my favorite record this year. Thou are a fascinating band, and I think at this point might start to be in the conversation of one of America's greatest metal bands. They've been around for, I'd say, about 20 years now, if not more, and they have a very almost hardcore and punk ethos to the way that they work, where they're very, very collaborative. They've worked with tons of people, like tons and tons of artists. They've worked with The Body a bunch of times. They released a full-length collaboration with Emma Ruth Rundle back in 2020. Their last full-length, that was a quote-unquote solo, was a full-length collab with Mizmor, which unfortunately wasn't that good. They just love to collab. They love to put out splits and EPs. They've literally put out an entire full-length Nirvana covers record. Like, this is a band that, again, it's very much plays into the DIY ethos of punk and hardcore music, in ways that not many metal bands do. You can maybe look at acts like Converge, maybe someone like Napalm Death, as other metal bands that operate the way that they do, but they're very much in their own lane. Just the way that they're open to working with anyone and everyone and producing really high quality music at a consistent rate. So the Nirvana album, covers album, is kind of an important kind of touch point here, because while they've typically been grouped under the kind of sludge metal genre tag, umbrella, whatever you want to call it, this is a band that has been very, very open for a long time about their love for grunge music. They literally have a full album of Nirvana covers. And you could always hear it in their early music. Like, they basically sound like a much heavier, much slower version of grunge. But on Umbilical, which, if you ask me, kind of has a similar title to In Utero by Nirvana, and that's definitely not a coincidence, Umbilical has them sounding more and more grunge than they ever have before, because they've taken their trademark slow tempos and just kind of double timed them completely. This is almost more of a hardcore record than it is a sludge metal one. It is intense, the tempos are high, it's fast paced, and it is vicious as fuck. This might be, and this is saying something, this might be their heaviest record. And for a band that is notoriously heavy, because of their, slow, trudging, disgusting, sludgy tracks, the fact that they're getting even heavier is just really astounding. For a band known for kind of their long, complex songs, there's not a single song on this record that eclipses the 7-minute mark, which, again, for this band is just crazy. Like, I remember Megas had, I think, like 3 or 4 8-plus-minute long songs. That's just kind of the way that they operate. This is Thou at their most streamlined, at their most focused, and absolutely at their most pissed off. Like, Brian Funk sounds just, and this is a guy who has always sound full of poison and vitriol, but he sounds so pissed on this. Like, he sounds mad, big mad, and the music is there to match it. This isn't slow and heavy for the sake of being slow and heavy. This is like, fuck it, let's just rip, let's just go for it. I've kind of laughed in the past at the thought of a Thou live show and trying to think of people trying to mosh to Thou's, like, you know, glacial pace riffage and just, you know, feedback distortion, soupy mixes. But this record is mosh music front to, like beginning to end. It is just balls to the wall, get her done. And in the moments where they do slow down a little bit, like on House of Ideas or kind of the last few songs, they're still, you know, going along at a mid-tempo, and it's still just so fucking heavy. I love this band. I love them so much, and their absence has been very apparent to me. I mean, Magus came out in 2018. That was 6 years ago. And sure, they've put out, you know, a few records since. You know, the Emma Ruth Rundle collab, the Mizmor collab. But for me, nothing quite hits like just pure, unadulterated Thou. And this is them at their most distilled form. It's still very much them. You wouldn't mistake this band for any other band in the world, but it's them with a heightened sense of urgency, a sense of pace, and again, like a real palpable sense of anger. Anger at what? I mean, what not? Like, what isn't there to be angry about, really? And you really feel it on this one. So, again, like, it's one of the best bands in the world coming back with another absolutely incredible record. I mean, there's not too much more to say about it. They're special. I truly believe at this point they deserve a mention among the best ever American metal acts. And, you know, after a six long year absence, it's so nice to hear them back and kicking just as much, if not more ass than ever. I still would say I have a slight preference to their doomier, kind of slower paced, complex songs, but I gotta say, for a band known for those, they know how to write a ripper. They know how to create a 3-4 minute long song that still sounds like them and packs the same punch as one of their 10-12 minute long ones. You know, they have so much capacity for diversity in their music, again, as we've seen through all their collaborations, but it's so cool to hear them within the confines of their own band, in their own music, stretching the limits of what it means to be Thou. Fuck, they're so good. And I'm so happy they're back. So, coming in at number 1-4, May 2024, is Umbilical by Thou. And truly, I could not have gotten a better birthday present. So, thank you. Yeah, so that's gonna be it for the month of May. Thanks again for waiting. Appreciate it. Won't be as long of a wait next time. So we will be chatting again in just a few weeks. And again, as I mentioned, if you're some random person who I don't know that is listening to the show, please find a way to reach out to me to let me know how and why you're listening, because I don't get it. Okay, talk to you later. Bye-bye.